All right, so here we are, and here with us from Survivor Fiji and Survivor Micronesia, it's Yao Man Chen. Yao Man, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, very happy to get to talk to you, someone we've been hoping to get a chance to talk to for quite a long time. And today we're going to be doing with Yao Man what we've done many times before, talking through his time playing Survivor, getting his real-time thought process on everything that was happening around him. But before we get into that, we'd definitely like to start with some more general stuff. And Yao, something we're very curious about with you is not only your background as a Survivor fan and casting, which we'll be getting to, but just your background in general. I know you're someone who has been globe hopping for the better portion of your life, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I grew up in Malaysia, actually on North Borneo. And I got to travel quite a bit younger, and I came to the U.S. For higher education, and I have been here ever since, and have been around most of the United States. So I'm very interested, I'm one of these geography geek people, can tell you what the capital city of Mongolia is and all that. So it's always been Survivor, it's a way, I think, of teaching Americans geography, because, before Survivor, who would have heard of Vanuatu and Cook Islands and all that, right?
Not me.
Actually, yeah. Survivor put Borneo on the map, right? The first season of Survivor, yeah. Suddenly, everybody talk about Borneo, and in fact, the Malaysian government actually cashed in on that quite well. I mean, that part of northern Borneo was called North Borneo. And in 1960, it was a British colony. I'm sure Don knows that. After independence, North Borneo and Sarawak joined up with Malaya to form Malaysia. And it was renamed, that North Borneo renamed Sabah, S-A-B-H. And of course, nobody knows about it. And so when Survivor Borneo came along, it's now, they renamed it back. Well, it's still Sabah officially, but everybody now, even Malaysia, refers to it as Malaysian Borneo.
Oh, wow. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, and the Pulau Dika, where they did the filming, is now a resort. You can actually go to Travelocity, Expedia, and actually reserve a few nights at a Survivor resort.
Okay, so what were you doing in life before you heard about Survivor, and how did you move from doing your thing to actually being on the show?
Well, I worked for the University of California at Berkeley. I was the geek there. I started out there running their instrumentation and electronics services for the college chemistry, and worked my way up through software development and so on. And by the time I went on to Survivor, I was the chief technology officer for the College of Chemistry. So pretty much I've been a geek all my life. And so when I was on the show, I think I was listed as a network engineer or something like that, if I remember right.
Some type of engineer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I basically built the network for the College of Chemistry, which consists of 6 buildings at UC Berkeley. At that time, they have a very decentralized IT. These last few years, they have been trying to rein everybody in and try to have their more centralized IT infrastructure. So,
yeah, definitely tell us about not only your background with how you got on Survivor, but what your background was before you even got on the show with Survivor. Like, were you a fan of the show at all?
Well, I was not a fan of the show in as much as I was not a fan of TV. I mean, I barely watched any TV. The only shows I watch on TV is probably news shows and 60 Minutes, and that's about it. But I did watch the first season of Survivor because it was made in Borneo. So, and so that's my sort of association with it. And I didn't watch any, other shows on TV until I found out from friends of friends and so on, and from people who call me saying, hey, you want to try for this show? And one of the production assistants I talked to, she asked me, do you know about Survivor? And I said, yeah, only because the first season was made in Borneo, and I grew up in Borneo. And so that's how, you know, they got really interested. In fact, they called me back 3 times that day to say, did you download the form? Did you get able to get the forms? So, and during my season, the premiere, before the premiere, they had, you know, these 30, you know, 10-second commercials about the upcoming season. And it was, you know, yeah, man, the man from Borneo was one of the taglines, I guess.
So that's the kind of role that you think they were casting you in. You weren't meant to be like the wacky old professor or anything like that.
Right. I think they every season they wanted some older guy. The other thing is that there are very few Asians who apply to these shows, right? And so, and also there are very few older people who are fit enough to apply to these shows. So, but they do want some older people. So I'm one of the oldest people on the show. I think, there are a couple of people older than me, but not that many.
Yeah. So in preparation, once you found out that you were going to go out and be on the show, what did you do to get yourself ready? Did you watch all of the old seasons?
Yeah, I tried to get as many seasons as I could from Netflix to watch them. So I started out, and I think I watched most of the seasons, except I think I missed Guatemala and Thailand.
Good ones to miss, I think, if you're going to skip some.
Really? Okay, good. That's why everybody tells me that I didn't miss much. So anyway, and of course, the filming of the Fiji season took place while Cook Island was running. So I only got to watch the first 3 episodes before I was shipped off to Fiji. So I didn't finish watching Cook Island either.
Did you have any, you know, you mentioned being one of the older guys, and I know you mentioned this in an actual episode of your season. I think about just having that as just kind of a general concern because it's one of the more common archetypes that gets booted or in the earlier rounds. Did you do any kind of planning for how to avoid that happening to you?
No, well, not really. But when I got on the island and I go, oh, my God, I'm the oldest guy here. I think the other guy who got medevac, Gary.
Yeah.
I think he's like a year or so younger than me. Either a year, yeah. And so I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be the first one booted out. I mean, after I met Gary, I go, okay, I may be this. And he was a little bit overweight, and I go, okay, I may be the second guy booted out here. So my strategy immediately was sort of ingratiate myself to the people, and I said, make myself useful. Don't be the cause of them losing any challenges, right? So you notice in my first few episodes, I was staying low key. I never have any opinions when it comes to how to do the challenges and so on, right? I was just trying to be the guy who didn't cause them to lose the challenge. That's all I care, right? So I didn't stick my head out and try not to be bossy or not try to be a leader or anything like that, so that if we lose challenges, and in fact we lost most of the challenges, I was not to be blamed for it, right? Then that was how I stayed on it, because I know as soon as we merge and we are going for individual immunity, I can hold on for myself, right? So yeah, when it was still tribes, yeah, I was just quite paranoid and trying to stay really low profile, and say just don't be the guy who caused them to screw up, right?
Right. Yeah. I think for starters, as we start talking about the specifics of your season, one thing very much worth flagging up is that you guys began with 19 players because at the very last minute, one woman just backed out, got cold feet, and said, "I'm not going to go out and do that." What did you know about the change in format and how that affected the game? And anything, any light you can shed on that entire situation,
well,
actually?
The funny thing is I didn't even know until very late, because the night before, yeah, we were all staying in tents, right? Everybody had their own little tent. It was a little tent city, and we all have tents. And I think the woman who left was in a tent next to mine, because the night before, I heard a lot of discussion in the tent next door, right? And it was quite late. And so lots of loud whispering and so on. And so I didn't think of anything of it. I thought, oh, maybe someone got sick or whatever, right? So when we were finally launched off to the island, we were put into two separate outrigger canoes, right? And so they were putting us on, and as we went on, I counted, say, one boat have 10 people, one boat have 9 people. Wait a minute, shouldn't there be even number? That's when I noticed somebody's missing. That's the first time I noticed somebody missing. Mm-hmm. And but I didn't know who was missing, because until then we were not allowed to talk to each other. We were not allowed to even look at each other for more than 30 seconds without being yelled at, right? They don't want us to know each other. They don't want us to have any hint of who the other guy is. Even when we're listening to music on our iPod, a lot of us brought our iPod with us to listen to music because we were bored while waiting. We were not to turn the music up, right? Because they don't want someone to hear what kind of music you're listening to get some idea of, you know, where your head is at, right? So, you know, we don't know each other. So when I realized, oh my God, there's 9 person in 1 hour and 10 person, that's the first time I noticed that somebody's missing. So they couldn't have started with 19. So from then on, I guess, you know, that was churning into my mind as to, you know, what are they going to do? You know, who's missing? And, you know, until I came home, I didn't even find out who was missing.
Sure. And at this point, I assume you've noticed that the tribes are fairly equally divided by race as well. And this is something which they tried in the previous season, and it caused a lot of controversy there. What was your first reaction to it? And did the cast in general have a kind of attitude towards it at all?
I don't know, but I think my season was also supposedly divided into race, right? Because there was 5 of us each. Right.
Right.
The 5 whites, 5 blacks, you know, 5 Hispanics, 5 Asians. So I think that they were going for another racial divide when they were casting. But I think because of Cook Islands controversy, they may have already have plan B in place and say, just in case, right? If we have to abandon the Cook Island thing, racial tribe divide, then, you know, this is our plan B. But I don't know what happened. They must have a plan C for someone, you know, now they have odd number of people. So that really, you know, threw a wrench in everything in that. So when they did the tribal separation into 2 tribes, they end up with 1 person picking, you know, doing the, you know, schoolyard pick type of thing. So.
Sure. I think there was someone, it might have been you actually, in an interview said that when you're on your way to a challenge, you could see the other part of the challenge as if it had been made for 4 separate tribes.
Yeah, we walk by challenges. We walk by at least 2 different challenges that never got used, right? So, yeah, I was sure they were built. These challenges are very elaborate. They were built 3 to 6 months ahead of time. They're all very well done, very well designed. They were, you know, heavy duty. You know, they weren't just, you know, put up temporarily. So they have the challenge built for specific number of people, specific number of groups of people playing. So, remember walking by at least 2 challenges there where, we walked by 1 that never got used. Everybody just walked by and stared and wonder, you know, when are we going to use that? Well, there's too many setups there. There's not enough people. The other time we saw a challenge was when, you remember when, I came in 2nd or 3rd in the challenge, the eating challenge, the roast pork hang dangling there. And
Yeah.
And that was the reward challenge, and we got to go to rafting in the white waters in another island. So to get to that white water, we flew in a little helicopter to get there. So while we were flying, we were looking down and we saw another challenge below us on one of the little islands. And then, you know, after we came home, I go, that challenge never got used either.
Yeah, so one reason we were very interested to talk to people from Fiji, and you in particular, was it's one of those seasons where if you look at the edit and then compare it to what people say in interviews and things like that, there's a large disparity between what's being shown in each case. And one of the big examples of that, and I'm curious to see what you have to say about this, is in that initial feeling out period where you haven't had any instructions, you haven't met Jeff Probst yet, and you're all living together on that one section of the island, there are rumors that there were alliances formed there that never really made the final cut, but which ended up determining a lot of what happened there. So in particular, you had the racial alliances and also this group that went off to explore the island, and then this group that stayed behind to build the shelter. Is there any truth to that, or is that just rumor?
No, I didn't. Well, I didn't think so. So just let you know, I'm not quite a social person. I mean, I'm really the sort of high functioning autistic guy. You see me in a party, I'm the guy who sits in the corner with a glass of wine, right? So I'm not a social person, but what? So I would not know if there were secret alliances forming. But the first night when we got there, we were given these plans to go find all the construction material to build the shelter. Everybody pretty much know that we need to figure out who's forming alliance with whom. So we all sort of stuck with each other, right? Nobody wants to go off with anybody. So if I remember right, everybody was just stuck with anybody who go off on their own or somebody else would start to follow them. And in fact, we were told by production, say, look, you know, you guys cannot play behind the camera, okay? So they need to record everything because basically what the show is, they're trying to tell a story with no script, right? And so they piece together a conversation many times in out of chronological order to tell the story because they know the outcome, right? So we would actually scolded a few times, you know, when they realize there are people trying to play off camera, trying to escape from the camera and talk. So they pretty much told us, look, if you go to the bathroom, go by yourself. If someone stopped by to talk to you, we'll put the camera on you. So I remember the first couple of nights before we got split up that, everybody just sticking with each other. So I don't know if there were alliances formed, it must be, you know, quite subtle, or maybe they formed it before they got an island, because I didn't think the quote unquote, play area, the area that we were confined to in that first night where the cave is, where we built the shelter, there was a very well-defined out-of-bounds area that we're not supposed to go. So, you know, I don't know how people, if they have formed alliances, how they could have made it.
Because I guess the kind of assumption behind a lot of what I heard is that there was like this one big group that kind of went off together or spent all their time together. And from what you're saying, it sounds like that wasn't really possible at all.
Yeah, not, I couldn't, at least I don't think it's possible because I remember everybody was around. In fact, when we were building the shelter, right, the concern was we were looking around, not so much as to who's not there forming life, but who's being lazy, who's not helping build the shelter, right? Because we remember we never finished this shelter. In fact, we barely got the roof on, right? And we got rained on. And I mean, it was pretty horrible because we were, you know, pretty much incompetent building shelter, even though we were given all the tools, carpentry tools, carpentry tools and all the wood and everything. So we were just wondering, you know, who's for the lazy bums who didn't, you know, put their fair share of work to help build this shelter that didn't get built.
Sure. And you guys at this point, you've observed before that the cast is divided along racial lines, and people have speculated a lot about any kind of racial alliances that there might have been. And in particular, one thing that gets hit on a lot is Earl maybe rallying the African Americans together, because we see the eventual final three of Earl, Dreams, and Cassandra, and it's something which Dreams, I think, tried to bring up at the reunion, and then Jeff Post kind of shushed him and didn't want him to talk about it. Is there any kind of truth to that from what you understand?
I think there may be some of it. At least for me, I hung on to Earl, right, you know, pretty early, because that would be a very unlikely alliance, right? If I align with Earl, you know, the old Asian guy with this young, you know, fit-looking, African-American and so on. So I sort of hung on to him quite early. And I know he told me very early on that if I were in alliance with him, I would also be in alliance with Cassandra. So I knew that was going on. So we never know where, I never knew where Dream's loyalty lies until the very end.
And then you found out.
Yeah.
Yes.
In no uncertain terms, right. One final thing on that quickly before we move on. A lot of the, one thing that really fed that speculation was when Sylvia had a divide in the group of the tribes early on, she did a long kind of, it seemed like premeditated lines where she clearly knew like who she wanted where and how she wanted it to be split. Did you get a sense of how she was thinking there, or was it just, you know, who she felt like she wanted to be with?
I think she thought that she would get to come back and join up with a, yeah, she divided it into, you know, a pretty, she didn't divide it equally, put it this way, right? And so she thinks that her chance would be to come back with one group that is much stronger than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then she ended up with our group.
Right.
The mistake was that, I don't know what she was thinking, because the group, you know, if there's odd person out and she's out on island, right, she should know that she would end up with the group that lost a challenge, right, and lost a person. So obviously, if you have a strong group and a weak group, well, guess what? Probably the weak group would lose a person and the first tribal council, and you would end up being dumped into the weak group when you come back.
Right, right. Let's talk about your Ravu tribe. What were your first impressions of the people? I guess we've talked a bit about Earl, and he's obviously someone who is extraordinarily personable, and who it makes a total amount of sense that you would be drawn to him, and he would be drawn to you. What did you think about the rest of the people?
Well, the other two, which I thought was, you know, I thought Michelle would be is good because she, you know, is very agile. I mean, she's a tiny little girl, but you know, as a rock climber and all that, I thought, oh, we need the agility. And so I was happy to have her with us. And then Rita was pretty much just Rita, right? I mean, she's the looker of that season. Cool. We need a looker, right? Although I didn't really necessarily need her in our tribe. And then there's Boston Rob. Not Boston. I mean, that's James, right?
Rocky, yeah.
We call Rocky. Rocky, yes. I was not happy with him on our tribe because remember the first night there was a big fight?
Yes.
Him and Dreams, right?
Right.
Now, what you saw was just a few minutes of it. But it went on forever. It went on all night.
Roughly how long, if you had to guess? Because they got heated.
Almost in an hour, it went on. There was screaming, and nobody else said anything.
Everyone was
either trying to sleep or pretending or trying to listen in to figure out what the big deal is, right? And it was like it went on and on. So having him, you know, end up our tribe, I was not, you know, I was on edge. It's like, okay, do not cross this guy, right? Did not ever cross this guy. I mean, I was just walking on eggshells, and we all were, right? It's like, you know, knowing what happened with him and Dreams. I mean, he just went up. So later on, I found out why. Like, the reason he was on edge was that he's a chain smoker, totally. I don't know, maybe 5 packs a day type chain smoker. And because there was no smoking, and he was not given a nicotine patch or whatever, he was on edge. I mean, he was going through nicotine withdrawal. That's what I think it is.
Yeah, we saw a similar thing out of Shane Powers early on in season 12, right?
Yeah. No, this guy, no, yeah, boss, this James, yes, just, oh man, he was on edge. And we were just tiptoeing around him. Please don't yell at me.
What was his problem with Anthony? Because it seemed like those two really had something kind of between them right away.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I think Anthony is a very nice, mellow guy, okay? And just it's not just James's style, right? And so, you know, he just on edge and he just decided to launch. See, I was afraid to be on that on his bad side and get yelled at too, right? So that's just James, okay? Having nicotine withdrawal problems all the time.
Because it seemed like he never really had anything against you in the same way, despite you also being like non-confrontational.
Exactly, because I was just trying to stay low profile. I am going to be you know, kissing your ass if I have to, you know, say, yes, sir, yes, okay. I was boiling water. I was keeping the fire going. I'm going to feed you and, you know, make water for you. Just don't yell at me.
One person who did seem to have a problem with you was Mookie, who, when the tribes are split later and you're in that flaming projectiles challenge, like, he's mocking your hand movements, and then you're teamed up for this reward challenge later, and he's kind of snapping at you and getting angry. And then at the very end, when Dreams betrays you, it cuts to the jury, and Mookie's there kind of, like, nodding happily. What was his issue with you?
I don't know what his problem with me is. I never found out. I mean, he's perfectly nice guy after the show and with him. That, in fact, I didn't even, to show you how non-sociable or how clueless I am in reading facial expressions, so I didn't know he has a problem with me until I watched the show and saw his expression and his, you know, mocking me. And I go, what is his problem, right? Because on the island, he was perfectly nice to me.
Yeah. One thing that's going to be a major consideration, and this is something we saw you with a major focus on every time it came up over the course of the season, and it's a topic we're going to talk a ton about, which is the Hidden Immunity Idol and Exile Island, because Exile is in play for your season. So I guess, what was your general approach to this, and how much weight did you place on at least knowledge of where the idol was, if not getting it for yourself?
I thought it was very important because, let's see, the Hidden Immunity Idol was introduced the season before, right? And Cook Island was the first time it was introduced.
Guatemala was, which you haven't seen, was a weird idol. And then season 12 and 13 had the God Mode Idol, and yours was the first season with the actual classical rules idol.
Right. So I was very concerned that that I should find it, right? Because being the old guy and really, I consider myself the most vulnerable of all the people there, right? And so I need to find it. I really need to find it. And that would be the power for me. So I regret not trying harder when I'm over, you know, when I was over the Rauru tribe, you know, while I was digging and so on. I really should have dug. It was actually buried quite deep, much deeper than I imagined, right? And so I never found it on the other island. And after we moved, when after the tribe switch, I did find it, because the clues are the same, right?
Right.
Both islands have the little cave, and the difference is in the Rauru island, the opening to the cave is sort of flat. If you notice, the clue says at the highest point. Well, you can't really figure out what the highest point is in that cave. But once I moved back to the other. After the tribal switch, and I moved back to the, you know, nice comfortable island, that cave have a lot more pronounced arch, and so it was quite obvious where, you know, under the highest point, where the highest point is, and I just keep digging, and it was deep. It was like about 18 inches deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been
easy to dig once you have tools, right? There were all the tools left over from constructing that shelter, so that was much easier than over at Rauru Island, where I don't have real tools except for the machete.
Right, yeah, and it's a funny juxtaposition seeing you pounding away with the machete during your initial attempts, and then you go, oh, a shovel, this is much easier, I should have just done this the whole time.
Right.
What was the consequence of Sylvia being on exile here? Because I imagine with now that she's away, you know, she doesn't get a chance to really ingratiate herself with the group, and you get a chance to find that life is perfectly fine without her. So was it kind of hard for her to fit in after she'd been away for so long?
Yes, and she tried very... So not knowing how it was played, because remember in the season before in Cook Island, the Hidden Immunity Idol was on Exile Island, right? So everybody's concern was that she would find the Exile Island, she would find the idol on Exile Island, right? Because until then, we didn't know that the idol was hidden, you know, under our feet, right where we were sleeping. So we all assumed, because of Cook Island, we all assumed that it would be on Exile Island.
Right.
So that's why we thought she's dangerous when she came back. And that's why I had to peek into her.
Right, yeah.
To see if she got it or not, right?
Classic.
I mean, that was everybody's assumption that, oh, she's on Exile Island. There's a likelihood that she would have found the idol. So that become all-consuming for me and say, look, you know, I wish I got to Exile Island. Now she has it. Now, I found out I deduced that she didn't have it because when she came back, she started trying to make an alliance with me right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and her strategy was she started talking to me in Cantonese.
Uh-huh.
Right, because she speaks very fluent Cantonese. And so do I. So she was trying to make nice with me. And I didn't let on the fact that I already have an alliance with Earl. And so in talking to her, she didn't answer this question straight out. You know, did you find an idol or whatever? But I forgot what I asked her, but after talking to her for a while, I got the distinct impression that she does not have the idol. So that made me feel a little bit better, that, you know,
sure.
We could, yeah, that there's no idol. If the idol is on the island, it's still there, and that she doesn't have it.
Right. One thing we kind of skipped over, and just kind of putting a pin in this briefly, is before Sylvia got there, you guys actually had to go to a tribal council and voted off Jessica. How did this go down on your end, or was it just kind of a consensus situation?
Yeah, because at that point, right, we don't hardly know, at least I hardly know each other. I'm not exactly the most social person. And so it was one of these situations where, you know, anybody but me and Earl, right, was all I cared.
Sure.
So, you know, I had to go along with it, right? So,
the thing that you've only really mentioned in passing so far is when you guys lose the first challenge, you go back to the camp and you're in a pretty bad spot here because your camp is just completely destitute. It's got nothing there. And, you know, in previous seasons, right, it's been standard where the tribe that wins more challenges gets more nice things, but here it's far more extreme than that. Did you feel that it was kind of unfair in a way that, yeah, the disparity was so great that, you know, you were pretty much guaranteed to keep on losing and keep on not getting nice things?
Yeah, we felt that it was extreme. Not only that, we didn't know how much they have, right? It turned out that as they win more things, they win bettings, right? Because all we knew by that time was that what we left was a shelter, okay, a completed shelter and lots of tools, okay? So that was the difference. And so we thought that, oh, we have a nice cave here, right? But we didn't realize that, you know, as it goes on, they got more and more stuff, right, including coffee makers and all that crap.
Yeah, they win a bed at some point, which...
So, yes, it got worse quickly downhill from there. It wasn't so bad at first. They said, yeah, you know, they have a good night shelter. We have a good cave here. And then, you know, quickly it got degenerated.
Yeah. How much did that kind of the have-not situation, we saw you guys, one of the early themes was you guys were just so dehydrated and starving, and obviously the other team were more the haves to your have-nots. How much of an impact does that, you know, after having played twice yourself and on several different tribes and at several different camps, is there any way to compare that Rabu situation to anything else you've ever experienced while playing?
No, it was horrible. Not only that, you know, the reason we got, I think Michelle almost fainted at one point. There was the water well was not only a long hike, but hike up quite steep rocks and down very steep rocks. So getting water was a chore, okay? And that was horrible because nobody wants to get water. And there was, before we got fishing gear, I think we found there were a few oysters on the rocks, but that didn't last very long. And so we ended up eating sea snails, which are the size of your thumbnail, right? And after you remove it from the shell, it barely fills the cavity in my teeth. So it was horrendous. I mean, it got worse. And as we lose challenge after challenge, you know, you can see that we were just so, you know, getting depressed about the whole situation. Say, look, you know, we're losing. We have to do something. But, you know, like Jeff during tribal council trying to, you know, talk us into being a little bit more positive. I mean, we become, you know, so negative about the whole situation, and nothing seems to work. And so that turned out to be good for me, because here I am the provider, right? So I'm boiling water, I'm keeping the fire going so that they always have clean water, and I could open up coconuts, you know, and not lose the coconut water, so everybody at least got coconut water to drink. So I became useful, a lot more useful. Had I been on the other's camp where, you know, they have all the luxury and so on, I would not be that useful, right? I would be a liability whenever we lose a challenge. But here we are, we're all starving, we're all hungry, we were all dehydrated. And I'm the one who kept them having enough water and enough, you know, food to eat. So I became the provider and became useful. So that helped me in the sense of being able to stay in the game.
Yeah, quite the happy coincidence. You guys lost the next couple of challenges, and I guess wherever you want to get into it with how Erica and Sylvia ended up going out, because it's the early episodes, I would say, of your season, it's kind of all so helter-skelter just as everyone's about to go to Tribal Council. It seems like, certainly with you, we don't see too much of what you're actually doing. Right. Earl wasn't there when Erica was getting voted out, so none of the really long-term players got the opportunity to shed light on that. So definitely would love to hear about how these went down.
So Earl was quite upset that Erica got voted out, but I was glad to see Erica get voted out because she was so bossy. I mean, she was telling everybody what to do during the challenge. For example, the challenge where we lost and she got right, she was telling everybody how things should how that poll should be put together, and we still lost it. And as I said, I wasn't going to tell everybody, you know, what to do. So none of these young people want an old guy telling them what to do. So I just kept it in the background. And so I was glad that, you know, everybody decided it was her, because it was obvious in that challenge that she was the most vocal. She was the one telling everybody, hey, this one have to go here. And then it turned out not to fit, and we have to undo and restart again. So in that sense, you know, she basically, you know, wrote her own ticket out by being, you know, so bossy and so vocal, like she know what's going on. And had Earl been there, I think Earl would have try and save her, right? Because if Earl was there and he managed to get enough people to not vote her and decide to vote somebody else, I'm sure I would have gone along with him, right? But being that he wasn't there and there was, you know, no other obvious candidate,
okay.
I'm glad she got out.
And you said he was your closest ally at this point. With him gone, did you feel kind of lost? Were you just trying to kind of like retreat into the background and hope nobody really noticed you?
That's what it is. I was just trying to stay low, right? Just don't blame me for whatever.
Yeah.
That's all I care. Hang on there until the merge, and I'll be good, you know. Because I'm not, like I keep saying, I'm not a good social player. I'm not a social person. So, you know, in a tribal situation, you need to smooth, you need to be, you know, with everybody. I'm not that type of person, right? I mean, basically, you know, you would never hire me to be a car salesman. So, I just...
Not if you're just going to be giving them away for free, dude.
Right, exactly. I just want to be there. You know, don't blame me. I'm going to, you know, make you, you know, give you water. I'm going to open up coconut for you. You know, I'm the nice guy. I'm going to feed you. Okay. So think of me as being useful, and you keep me around until we merge.
Yeah, not only useful, but presumably non-threatening if you're not out causing action.
Right.
Yeah.
Not giving them too many opinions about challenge, right? Oh, whatever you guys say, fine. Even though I don't think it's correct, but I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, this is wrong. I'm just, okay, fine. So if we lose, hey, that wasn't my idea, right?
Right. So Sylvia going out next, was it just she never really meshed with the group?
She never meshed, yeah. Yeah. No. She's still pissed off at me for voting her out. Every time I see her, she lives in a town just north of me, and so occasionally we get to run into each other. She's still playing that game in her head. Michael, Sylvia, it's been 6 years. Get over it, okay?
Yeah. So after this, after Sylvia goes, and you get after this next reward challenge, you get sent to Exile Island for the first time, and now you get four clues to the idol. And I, you know, we hit on this earlier, and this is going to be yet again just a major theme for your entire crafting your strategy this season. What was your game plan now that you had these four clues and presumably knew roughly exactly where it was?
Well, my only obsession was to go find an idol.
Okay. What'd you...
And to find the idol without... What I wanted to do was to try to find the idol without anybody knowing that I found the idol. But after I got the clue and realized where the idol is hidden, it became obvious that that's not possible, right? We're sleeping over it.
Yeah.
So how do I... You know, how do I dig under somebody's bed without them knowing it, that I'm digging for the idol? So that's where I have to then depend on somebody, so in this case, Ernst. And so I have to have him help me, right?
Right.
You get the tribes out, go hunting for food, go get them out of the campsite so I can dig for it. And if I find it, we'll find some way of sharing the use with you. That was my deal with him.
Out of curiosity... If the idol had been back at camp, but the clues you knew Earl had seen would not have explicitly pointed him towards it, and you could conceivably get it without anyone knowing, would you have done that, or would you still have tried to work with Earl and, with the idol?
No, if I could have gotten myself without any help, I would not have shared it.
Yeah. That's the smart play, I think. So you guys lose this next immunity challenge, but instead, Modo chooses to keep their luxurious camp and go to Tribal Council themselves. They lose, Papa Smurf gets medevaced here, and Liliana gets voted out. And despite not winning challenges, you guys are actually all even up at 7-7, until you lose the next one, and then Rita goes, excuse me. How did this come about? It seems like, as I was watching these episodes recently, watching your guys' pre-Tribal Council segments, there were so many, and this was one of them, where I just felt like I wasn't totally sure what was happening.
No, not much was happening. Again, it was still, in my mind, it was still anybody but me, right? So I defer to Earl, and whoever alliance he may have made that I may or may not know about, right? So I really, if I have a choice, I would have taken out Cassandra, right? But that was not an option. And so he really didn't like Rita because she talks too much. Again, it's like, okay, anybody but me. So I went along with it, basically. And she wasn't much of a, you know, she wasn't much use at challenges also. So it was no big loss, right? My thought was that, yeah, we need to keep some strong people because eventually we will have another challenge that requires, you know, the stronger people would have an advantage.
Sure. And speaking of challenges, during this time, we see the sumo challenge and then the pairs challenge, the concentration game. And if you had said to me before the season that you have this older computer scientist guy, you wouldn't have expected that he would score the only point for his tribe in the sumo challenge and then mess up the pairs challenge.
Yeah, that was scary, right? That I forgot something I saw 30 seconds ago. That's what dehydration and malnutrition does to your brains, man. I was scared. I was like, oh my God, I hope this is not permanent.
Yeah, I guess it's like a more general question. Obviously, you're someone who's very good at coming up with ways to like outthink the challenge or find the best way to approach it. It surprised me that, I mean, I guess you said your strategy was to like hold back and not give suggestions, but when you see people kind of like just not having a clear plan in place for these challenges, do you ever feel like you really want to step in at all?
Oh, yes. A lot of times, but yeah, it was a great restraint not to say something or put in your 2 cents worth when someone's doing something really stupid. Like, for example, the very opening scene, you know, where they dropped the box and nobody could open it, right?
Right,
And then I came in and opened it. Actually, you know, they actually tried for about 40 minutes. What you saw was just a few minutes. But I sat back. I knew how it should be open, but I wasn't going to. So this was the first time we met each other, right? So I'm not going to be the old guy, you know, who's going to tell those young guys what to do. So I just sat there and watched them jump on it like gorillas until the very end when everybody had to try. Every big burly guy had to try at it. Then finally I came, can I try? So that was that was a long time. You know, I had to hold back because I know that I'm not going to get away with telling them, hey, this is how you open it, right?
Right. Definitely. Yeah. I'm sure they would be off-put by that much more so than appreciative. So you guys actually end up swapping now. And when you're on this new Moto tribe, you don't go back to Tribal Council for a little bit. But you're on this new tribe. Fortunately, you're there with Earl and Cassandra and Boo and Stacy and Michelle. And you're now at the Moto camp where everything's got the swanky hookup. What was the difference between that? I have to imagine it's the difference between the worst shelter ever, or not worst shelter, but worst survivor experience ever and best survivor experience ever.
Oh, that was great. I mean, to have a, you know, coffee maker, French press and that. Oh, my gosh. And have, you know, all the tools we need to do anything and have cushions and pillows. The first good night's sleep for a long time, right?
Right. Actually, one thing
I was glad to see Boo there. I was so glad to see Boo there. Because, you know, he seems like, you know, one of these people who are strong, who's going to gung-ho to do anything, right? And so I was quite glad to see him. I wasn't sure about Stacy. And I never really got to know Stacy or which, you know, what she's about or where her alliance is and so on. So she's sort of mysterious to me. So I'm glad that Earl and I ended up on the same tribe and to have Michelle come along, so.
One thing that I was definitely very curious about is the extent to which it feels like that Moto camp almost isn't even real Survivor when it's just like that lavish.
Yes.
Was there any air of that within the tribe?
No, we agree. I mean, it was like camping, right? It's like luxury camping.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, like Colin said, during this time, you don't have to go to Tribal Council, so there's not too much scheming going on. You guys just get to sit back. There are a few key events that happen during this time, though, so we just want to get your thoughts on those quickly. The first one is, this is the time where you find the island, the new Moto camp.
Right. And with the help of Earl.
Right.
Yeah. How instrumental was he in that?
Oh, he was, because he got the tribes, he got everyone to go off, what was that? I was trying to think, either to go retrieve the boat or to go find food. They went off and I did not go. It was a very hot day. And so the excuse was that I don't feel very well. So I don't want to get sick. I'm going to stay back here and rest. That was my excuse. And so Earl was able to convince everybody to go. I don't know how he did that, but everybody went along and I was left alone. And to dig, let's say somebody, Cassandra stayed behind, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, I think I remember somebody stayed behind. Because I remember trying to, I have to watch it again. Because I think when I was trying to wrap up the fake one, I don't know, my memory is fading. I think there was somebody else in the bed, asleep or something, because I had to be very careful.
Oh, okay, because it was presented as you were there alone and were able to find it, but that definitely adds.
I think during the digging, I was alone. I think when I first found it, I was alone. But I think I'm trying to think why I was so, when I was trying to dig it up again to bury the other one, that there must be somebody around because I was so paranoid that someone would know that.
During this time, you guys get to relax. You're not going to tribal, but that does mean that the other tribe is going. And you see Anthony get voted off. What do you think was going on over there?
I have no idea. Really. And so I was wondering, you know, how they're going to make out in the, especially people who just moved into that camp. It's like, after a week of luxury, how are they going to... you know, it must be a shocker for them to have to deal with that situation, you know, knowing that they've been living in luxury for so long. So I was just wondering how they're going to cope, the people who moved to the other side, how they're going to cope.
Mm-hmm. Well, they ended up coping quite, at least for the time being. Your team kept winning these immunities. And the next time that you actually had to go back to Tribal Council was, it was actually after you guys had merged. You got that one little merge Tribal Council break. But let's get into this merge now. You guys both gather on Exile Island and you get the new buffs and everything. So it's definitely a merge. What's the game plan now that you're assessing who's still in the game? What are your objectives here?
Well, once this merge, I felt much better. I was quite confident that after it merged when we're going for individual immunity, that I can do it, because all the strategies in my head and so on, I'm going to play it out, right? But because during when we were in tribes, I have all the strategies, but I'm not going to play it out. As I keep saying, you know, if we didn't work out, I don't want to be the guy blamed. But here it is. If I'm playing for myself, hey, I know if the strategy doesn't work, I have nobody else to blame but myself, right? That's fine. I'm willing to take the risk for myself. So, you know, I was quite happy to be in the merge. And that's when I said, okay, here, I'm going to turn the game, you know, really turn it on, because every challenge, I am going to use whatever strategy, whatever resource I have to win it, you know, and no holding back, you know, and the only resource, since I'm not the buff, strong, athletic guy, you know, strategy is the resource for me is brain power at this point.
Right, right. How did you feel about the other people that made up this merge tribe? Did you feel like you had a pretty secure position?
No, I did not, because when I saw that Mookie and what's the other guy, Agato, right?
Right.
These, you know, they look very athletic, and because I thought, so I made the mistake of not knowing that Earl is, you know, Earl looks like he's an athletic guy, you know, but he's not, okay? It turned out that he's not, okay? And later on, I found out why, because when he grew up, he had what's called the Perthes disease, you know, where he was in a cast until he was a teenager to straighten out his hips and so on, his thigh bone. So he's, you know, pretty much a spokesman for that now. But I didn't know that, right? He never let on, right? So me hanging on to him, thinking that he's the big, you know, buff, athletic black guy that I'm going to be with, right? And then, you know, seeing Edgardo and Mookie, they are very athletic. And so I'm looking at them and say, oh, my God, for individual immunity, when it comes to things that require physical strength, things that require athleticism, you know, these are the two I go up against. Boo, I'm fine with. He's just as good. But he's on our, you know, since I've gotten to know him after the tribal switch, I feel better.
Sorry, what were your thoughts actually on this being a predominantly male tribe?
Right. So all the women left were, you know, sort of non-threatening when it comes to challenges. So I didn't have to worry about it.
Okay.
Okay.
And also, at this point you meet Alex and Edgardo and Dreams. You've had a small chance to interact with them, you know, that first period initially, and then maybe at some challenges. But you're on a tribe with them now for the first time. What were your first impressions of them?
Well, I was only worried that they will be, you know, challenge monsters, right? And the other problem, of course, that I never got to know them. So, for example, if it were a racial thing, Mookie never reached out to me as being a fellow Asian there, right? And so so that gave me the thought that, well, maybe he's not, you know, thinking about some kind of a racial alliance or anything like that. So by then he probably know that I'm already in alliance with Earl.
Well, let's get into all of this, because Michelle gets that rough draw for the challenge at the merge, and she gets voted out. Do you think she would have been in any kind of jeopardy otherwise if it hadn't been for that twist?
No, she was in very good alliance with me and Earl. We would have protected her.
Okay.
Well, hold on then. So when that challenge comes and Jeff announces this twist, it's something which you don't really have time to process. And then after the challenge, you find out that the losing tribe doesn't have any time to talk. They go into tribal council immediately.
Right. They were blindfolded and then taken off.
Yeah. So one question then, was Mookie able to take his idol with him? Because I imagine he didn't take it to the challenge.
No, right. He would not, because it was right after the challenge they were taken off. So, I mean, we don't take everything with us to the challenge usually. Right, we only take water and a change of dry clothes with us.
Okay. Yeah, and so while this challenge was happening, and obviously it's something which you've just learned about, you haven't really had time to think about it, but do you consider, because your group is, if I remember correctly, it's you, Earl, Edgardo, Boo, and Cassandra, I think. Did you consider maybe tanking that challenge and booting Edgardo, because then you'd have the three votes to do it and it would just be very clean, you'd make sure that Michelle's safe and you could lock everything down?
No. I would never consider throwing any challenge.
Okay.
But not only that, we didn't know what the gameplay was, right? We didn't know that they were going to go shuttle off to tribal right away.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. I think when there's so much left unknown, that's definitely err on the side of caution, generally right. speaking.
Right.
Yeah. So let's move on. I think from there, we're now down to the final nine, and it looks like Dreams is now turning on the Four Horsemen. Actually, one thing I meant to bring up that I haven't gotten to yet is at the merge, it seemed like one of your main priorities was finding out where that other idol was. How did you go about doing that?
No, the priority is finding out did someone find the one that was over in the Raravu camp?
Right.
Right. So I didn't expend any effort to do that. I wanted to find out, so I left it up to Earl and to Michelle to find out after the merge. Right? And we pretty much lost Michelle right away. And so that was not. So I, you know, put it this way, again, I would not know how to. I mean, go up to them and ask them, did you find the idol? I mean, so I left it up to my allies to figure out who has it. And so there were a lot of speculation as to who may have it.
If you hadn't lost Michelle there, who do you think would have been the first to go? Because we see a lot of speculation about Boone and Stacy. It seemed like people were fairly doubtful about them. You know, would it have been one of them or one of the guys, you think?
Stacy would have gone. It would have been Stacy. Had okay. it not been a weird one, right? If had it been a standard challenge and then everybody go back and at the end of the evening go to tribal council, if there were some discussions involved, it would have been Stacy. We were going to have Stacy go.
Okay,
that was our next one on the list.
Because typically people think, you know, they look at the big strong guys and see them as threats and want to take them out immediately. And you have right. Alex and Gardo there who you haven't really met before. What was it about right. Stacy? Because when we get to the challenge where you have to, whether it's like the majority vote on who they like most and things like that, Stacy just gets slated with every negative answer. So what was she
right.
doing that was
because,
so objectionable?
I don't know. I have no idea. Because I didn't get to, like I said, she was quite a mystery character.
Oh, sure, after
we
yeah.
swapped tribe, there she was. Nobody, I never got to know her very well. She kept to herself. And I think she sort of rubbed everybody the wrong way. And so nobody liked her. And I would think that, I thought that she was in very strong alliance with the Muki Egado group. Right. And so I would go along with taking her out just to break up the alliance. Right.
Okay.
So in the case where, yeah, you want to break up the alliance, yeah, you want to take out the strong guys, but if they're not enough votes for the strong guys, right, then at least break up the alliance.
Okay. So it happens, you do lose Michelle, and then we get to the next immunity challenge, and you win your first immunity.
That was an easy one for me. So just to let you know that the width of that cage in which we had to stand, they're different width depending on our height. So they proportion it to our height.
Okay.
But what they didn't proportion is to our weight. So if you're a 130-pound guy like me, it's much easier on the feet than if you're a 200-pound guy like, you know, Dreams, right?
Right.
Sure.
And if you have sweaty feet, forget it. I don't have sweaty feet. So that was so easy. I could have stood there for another hour.
So it seemed like that was very well suited to you. So you come back to camp with the immunity necklace, and now there's a lot of paranoia about the idol. We see it getting switched around right. a lot of times, and Dreams seems to not know where his head's at, and no one else knows where Dreams' head is at, where his head's at. So Stacy, who is luckily still there, comes up with this idea of booting Edgardo just to keep people guessing. Was that something that was her idea, or was it just like edited that way for some reason?
Yeah, I think I'm quite sure she came up with that. Because I don't think anybody else was really... I mean, everybody was paranoid, but I noticed that she's the only one who ran around talking to everybody.
Okay.
So, I think it's pretty fair that she would have come up with that.
Yeah, and it seems like as soon as she voices the idea, everyone's on board with it. Like, they realize that that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, that was pretty much.
Right, just because purely based on the logic, I imagine that Edgardo is the least likely to be the one with the idol.
Right.
Right, okay. So Edgardo...
And by then, everybody pretty much assumed that either me or Earl have the idol.
All right, because could we see the three remaining horsemen?
Right, that was pretty much an assumption.
Yeah, we see the three remaining horsemen vote for Cassandra here, and it seems like that was more based out of personal enmity towards her. Again, what was it about Cassandra that really offended them that much?
Well, because she didn't do anything. She was just there. And I don't think she did anything overtly obnoxious or anything like that. She just didn't do anything in the camp. So, and they all know that she's in alliance with Earl. They all
right.
do. And so they suspect that either Earl or I have the idol, right? So they would target her just to break up the alliance.
Okay, so Edgardo goes home here in one of what I think is still one of the most dramatic blindsides ever. Look, it makes for great television. And you come back to camp, and at this point, Alex and Nuki pretty much know that they're dead to rights and their days are numbered. So those two have to be slated as the next to go. Given that you know that, and that you know at some point you're going to have to start turning on your own, do you start planning for the late game here? Like, what did you have in mind?
Well, I had in mind the final four being me, Earl, Stacy, and Cassandra. That would be a winning run for me. In any challenges with those three, I cannot lose.
Oh, I hadn't
sure.
considered that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's interesting that you put Stacey's name in there, because if she would have been the one voted out if you had your way, was there someone right. else in there originally, or did you come up with that idea a bit later?
Originally, I was going to have Michelle there.
Okay.
But
right.
after realizing how unpopular Stacey is, right, then even if I end up in front of the jury with Stacey, you know, then I know as a winner. As soon as I realize how unpopular she is for whatever reason, right, then, yeah, I want her in the final four with me.
Yeah, and if you did end up there with that group, like, did you still intend to take Earl, or would you have cut him loose towards the end?
I probably would, because I did promise I would take him along. And also by then, I realized that, you know, he's not as athletic as I initially thought he is, that I can really, you know, beat him out in most challenges. Except dancing, right, maybe.
Right. Well, I think the big question is, could you beat him in the end? Did that weigh on your mind that Earl, if you were to wind up in the final three with him, that maybe that might not work out well for you, or were you confident that you could beat probably anyone?
I was confident. You know, in my Jewish speech, I would point out, right, how many challenges I have won. You know, I would play it up that this is a game you win. I'm winning it the hard way by winning challenges after challenges. Right. That this I didn't. Play the social game. I didn't, you know, I would play it up that way.
And do you think that pitch would have worked?
I think it will work, because I think that with Edgardo and Mookie and so on, that I have been able to impress them by winning so many challenges. I think that will work.
Okay, that's interesting, because that's something that we're going to ask you a lot later, but it's good to get that out of the way here. So at this point, Alex and Mookie are very desperate. They're looking for any way to try and work their way back in. The one idea they come up with is they go through your bag, find your idol, and go back and try and give you an ultimatum.
Yeah. So they suspected that. So it's obvious they want to break up our alliance, right? To break up the alliance, they wasn't sure whether Earl or I have the idol. So that's why it was so important for them to figure out who has the idol, right? Because if they voted for somebody with the idol, then it may backfire on them, right? Because they know that our alliance is going to be vote for one of them, right? So yeah, that's what got them so obsessed with finding out, did I have the idol?
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes, perhaps my favorite scene of the entire season, is when they confront you about it, and they're like, this is going to change everything. And you're like, no, it's probably going to not change anything for the next couple of rounds.
Right.
Did you genuinely feel, even though they, you know, your cover had been blown, that you would still be totally okay?
Yeah, I think I was quite sure my alliance by then, reluctantly having brought in Dreams along, that it was quite solid. By then, I think quite sure that dreams was part of our lives. Because for a while we weren't sure. Right after, you know, the merge, we were not sure whether he's a double agent for the other side or he's really with us.
It's tough to be sure with dreams. Now, as mentioned, Mookie and Alex go out. Was there anything they could have done to save themselves apart from winning immunities?
No, we were sort of a stubborn bunch. We weren't going to switch around alliances, you know. At least for me, it's like I made this alliance, you know, at least between myself and Earl and Michelle, we've been along for so long, and then we lost Michelle, and now, you know, we still have Cassandra, so I was not going to switch around, you know, go alliance hunting again. And so when Earl convinced me that Dreams is pretty much solid with our four, then, you know, I was good with it.
Okay, so we're about to move on to the final sixth round and the car deal, which I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. But before Alex goes, we kind of see the seeds of that being sown here, where you're certain having this conversation with Cassandra, where you say, when we get to final four, I don't see you voting Dreams off at that point in favor of me. So at that point, were you already concerned that what eventually does happen to you is going to happen? And were you relying on Earl to kind of keep you safe at that point?
You know, I know pretty much that Cassandra and Dreams were very tight, right? They would never vote each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And so those two being very tight, my choice at that time was that, well, I need, for security, if I really want to go ahead further, I need to dump those two and bring in Stacy and Boo, right, to be the final four with me and Earl.
Right, give yourself, like, room to play, so they're not just going to auto-boot you. Right,
because I know while Boo and Stacy were together from the beginning, but I don't think they would be as tight as Cassandra and Dreams. So that was sort of a little bit playing in my head. And of course, you know, 2020 is hindsight that I should have acted on it. Because if I have gone to Boo and Stacy, right, and say, hey, I want to switch up Final Four, I'm sure they'll come along with me.
Well,
I'm sure they will say yes.
Yeah, I definitely don't question that. I would at least be concerned about how Earl would respond to that. Did that factor into
things? But at that time, Earl would be very upset. But that doesn't change my promise to him, because my promise to him that I would bring him to the final, right? Then I could still, right? So
right.
The final four would be me and Earl and Stacy and Boo.
Right. Right, and it's also, Earl can be as upset as he wants. If you're at the final five,
exactly.
There's nothing he can do about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right, but I will keep my promise of keep bringing him along, right?
So. Okay. So we get to the Royal Challenge here, and you learn that you're playing for a car, and this is where the infamous car deal goes down. I'm sure it needs no introduction. People know a lot about it already, so take us through that in your own words.
Well, I sort of overplayed it, right? So we were in the final six, and I thought that, look, the only person who's so we have enough votes. We have decided that the next person to go is Boo, okay? And so that leaves the final five with Dreams being the strongest guy, right? So my thought was that, look, without Boo, I can beat everybody in any subsequent challenge to come. I was quite sure of that. And the only person I would not be able to beat would be Dreams. And I pretty much thought that the final challenges are usually some kind of endurance challenge, right? And so if I go up against endurance challenge against Earl or Cassandra, I'm sure I can beat them. Because by now I know Earl is not that athletic. The only guy who's going to have I'm going to have problem with is Dreams. So that's when I decide that I should make a deal with Dreams at the final four. Right. And as I said, you know, yeah, by then we know we have enough votes to get rid of Boo and Stacy. So they're not a problem, But Dreams is, and I need to buy an insurance with Dreams, and saying, I think I way overplay that.
Well, out of curiosity, when you were beginning to pitch this idea to Dreams after you won the car, what was the reaction like from Probst and production? Because obviously this is something that we'd never seen before, or anything close to
they
it.
They didn't do anything. I was surprised. I was totally surprised to them.
That's good for them, I would say.
They were just completely shocked. In fact, you know, there's no more car challenges since that season.
Yeah.
And
your wife
was very upset. Ford was very upset.
Oh, wow.
Really?
So here's the backstory. During the finale taping, right, we were all waiting in the green room. You know, in the finale, everybody sits in the theater to watch the first 2 hours, and then in the final hour, we come in live.
Right.
We were told, and the producers came in two or three times to remind us that when we are live on the finale, we are not to mention Ford. We are supposed to say the truck or the car, but do not say the Ford truck.
Right. It's like an act of an endorsement from Yao Na and Shan that Ford is not a car worth owning, right?
It was like, I in my naivete didn't realize how important it is, right? That this company that pay, you know, gazillion dollars to endorse for product endorsements here, I totally diss it. I mean, I didn't jump up and down and embrace the truck and so on. I mean, my God, what am I going to do with a $40,000 truck that gets 8 miles to a gallon? Come on.
Right.
You know, I own two hybrids, you know? But if I have known, I would have played it up a little bit, but I don't. I mean, I was totally clueless, right? And so I think Ford was really, really pissed off with that. Wow. Whoever the advertising agency that got Ford into it, right?
What?
of having product endorsement in reality TV where the people, you know, you have no control. So they had no idea I was going to do that. And I was actually playing in my head that if I win this thing, I want to make a deal with it. And I think I overplayed it. And so to tell you what would be the correct play, right? For the correct play would be for me to keep the truck, okay?
Right.
Pam, you know, love the truck and all that. And then at the final challenge of the final four challenge, when I'm hanging there, right? You remember the final four, the final four challenge, right?
Yeah.
We were the Chinese torture, water torture. When I'm hanging there, I should turn to Dream and say, Dreams, I'll make a deal with you. You drop right now, I'll give you that truck. He would have dropped.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it was framed in a way where he knows that if he does that, he's getting voted out by you as soon as
right.
you hand over the keys there. So did you consider attaching any other conditions to it or anything like that?
I gave him too long a time to think through it.
Yeah.
Right. He's not the type who's going to think long term, right, when confronted with something. So, you know, immediate gratification, right? So if he were hanging in there and I just turned him and say, I give you a truck, you drop, he would have dropped. And I know I could outlast the other two easily.
Yeah, because in real time, I believe, it was only about 2 days between you winning and giving him the truck and then that final challenge where he ends up not handing you the necklace, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so
Two days is a lot of time for Dreams.
Yeah.
Yes, not only that, now, here's something that I am beginning to think that maybe some producers got to him.
Ooh. I don't
know. Okay.
Right. Could it be somebody sort of put some bug in his ear about not?
You know, it certainly makes for compelling television if he sits and keeps the truck.
I mean, I think people would have loved to see you win, but at the same time, from their perspective, having that big dramatic betrayal at the last moment of the season is a great way to end it for them.
Otherwise, it's predictable, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, when you made this deal at the time, how confident were you that he would actually go through with it?
I was actually quite confident. I really was.
And were you sure that you would make it to Final Four for that deal to kick in? Like, were you concerned that they would take a shot at you beforehand?
Yes. No, I was confident. I was very confident that Earl and Cassandra was on my side, right? And as long as Earl and Cassandra is on my side, they will keep Dreams on our side. So we have enough votes to get rid of Stacey and Boo.
Oh.
Unless Boo keeps winning.
Okay, because that's something else which I think doesn't really get appreciated, because now Boo wins, and now I think maybe is Boo winning what really inspires the others to get to gather together and strike at you? Or if had Boo not won, would he have just gone and...
If Boo keeps winning, right, I would then make my pitch to Boo. I mean, I wish Boo had won, you know, earlier, so I could... It will prompt me earlier to make the pitch with Boo to go Final Four with him and Stacey, right?
I guess my question was, at that Final Six, when the other four band together and vote for you, do you think they would have done that had Boo not won immunity there? Like, would the plan still have just gone through as intended, Boo goes, and then you're at five?
Only at five, you're at five with your idol, where it then guarantees you to get to four.
Right, because then I have to use it, right? That's when I have to use it, yeah.
Sure, so Boo winning actually has wider consequences than most people realize at the time.
That's what happens when you face too confident, right? That's when you're too confident with your alliance that you're reluctant to make any switching around, which may benefit you more towards the end, right?
Yeah.
So that's the big mistake.
Because I know certainly as viewers, like, we never really thought Cassandra or Stacey or even Boo would really show that level of gumption to, like, realize that you needed to be out of the game and try and make that happen. As it turns out, right, they do go for that, but you wise up at the last second and play your idol. How did you become aware that they were going after you? We saw that the way it was edited was, at Tribal Council, Stacey makes this remark which sounds kind of curious, and then the kind of wheels are turning in your head and you figure out that this is what's happening.
Yeah, so that was in fact sort of almost, I would say not so much a leak, but because I was listening very carefully, because when we were getting ready to go to the Tribal Council, we're packing our bags to go to the Tribal Council, and one of the few producers asked me, did you take your idol with you?
Mm-hmm.
Very casually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so... when I was sitting there at Tribal Council and hear Stacey saying all these things, right? I put two together and go, oh, the producer reminded me to take my idol with me.
So that was the bad vibes, as the producer reminded you?
Yeah, I remember. No, he didn't remind, he just asked me. He said, did you take your idol with you, right? So that combined with what Stacey said, like, oh, yes.
when you were setting off to leave for that Tribal Council, I guess prior to that reminder, or that question from the producer, how likely did you think it was that you were going to end up playing that idol that round?
I was hoping not to have to play it. I was going to hold on to it to the end,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I was afraid that. You know, if any one of them can turn on me, right? Maybe other than Earl, but I don't know. You know, dreams can turn on me. Anybody can dream turn on me, right? So hey, I need it. If I don't need it, I don't want to use it. I'm not going to use it if I don't need it. But I need to have it with me, you know, in case I need to use it.
Okay. So as it happens, you play your idol, Stacey goes home. And now at the Final Five, where Boo finally loses immunity and you win it again, so congratulations on that. And so Boo goes out without incident, pretty much. The one thing that does happen here, though, is that Earl finds the final idol and manages to play it for himself. If Boo had won again there and you would be in the hot seat, you know, do you think that Earl would have given you his idol, or would he just let you get voted out there?
I don't know. I would think he would have. But I would not depend on that. I would go cozy on up to Boo.
Mm. What was Boo's situation? Did he have any? I know he was with Stacey for a while, but after Stacey's gone,
he had nobody. But he really didn't like Dreams or Cassandra at all.
Okay,
right.
Which is good enough. Yeah, he doesn't have to love you as long as he hates them.
Right. Exactly. If I have cozy up to him and say, hey, Boo, you know, you and I are two votes, right? So all I need is to convince Earl,
right,
to come, right, that it's not me, that then I'm safe, right.
Do you think Earl would have gone along with that? I guess it's similar to the Island
Earl
question.
Would probably go along to vote for Dreams. He'll probably not go along to vote for Cassandra.
Okay, but he would. How likely do you think it would have been that he would go along with Cassandra and Dreams to vote for you if Boo had that immunity?
He would.
He
I
would.
Think he, oh, and also that final, the final base running challenge, just for your information, you saw on TV, it looked like I barely beat him. That's not true. I beat him by a long shot.
Oh, it's one of those standard things where it's made to look much closer than it is. Yeah. Okay.
You know the trick about running bases, right? Blindfolded, you put your hand on one wall
the left
and keep running as fast as
you can.
Doesn't matter. Just stay with the same wall and don't change.
Sure.
My hands will cover splinter when I'm done.
Yeah, I was thinking that we rotated it, actually. Like, your hands are going to be messed up after that, but... Yeah, so that round then, how awkward was it coming back from camp after these guys had just tried to blindside you and you have to live with them for another day or two and potentially, you know, work with them and maybe vote with them?
No, my strategy was not to make a big deal of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not to show that any emotions about it, right? Because I don't know, I don't want to alienate any one of them because I'm not so sure that I want to I may need their help, any one of them, right? So I was just going to play it cool and say, yeah, it's okay, it's a game. Of course I'm pissed, but I'm not going to let show them that I'm upset about it.
Sure. One thing you do maybe show doubts about is we see this conversation between you and Dreams where you say, hey, Dreams, yeah, if you do change your mind, will you at least not vote for me? So were doubts starting to creep into your mind at this point that maybe he would actually keep it?
Yeah, at that point, when we're so close to the end, right? Earl's a smart guy, and I could see that, you know, he is in such... I'm beginning to see that he is in a much stronger alliance with Cassandra than with me. So that's when I have to sort of plead my case.
Yeah, because could we see Dreams in a confessional later say, if I do the wrong thing, you'd all better vote for Yao together. So it's, you know, his mind was clearly worrying at this point too. Boo gets voted out, and now you're at the final four, and you go to your final challenge, and it's the Chinese water torture thing where you're hanging from this bar while the water cascades over you. And so it comes down to you and Dreams as the producers intended, as God drew it up. Figuratively, of course. And so you're in a position where if you win this challenge, you're probably guaranteed $1 million. Even if you don't, then you'll rely on Dreams to maybe follow through on his word. What were you thinking when your hand slipped and you fell into the water there?
No, I was still thinking I'm safe because I made a deal with Dreams.
Okay.
Right. I don't know if you noticed, I was the way I hung on so long is that my hands were on, you know, in-out position. So, you know, with basically not hanging, you know, hanging with, you know, like my thumbs, both thumbs from both hands pointing in the same direction, and then switching both hands at the same time, right? In one of the switches, I slipped, so.
Okay.
I was always really curious, and maybe you did do this, and it didn't make air. When it came down to just you and Dreams in that challenge, did you just say, hey, if you're going to give it to me anyway, just drop and I'll take it?
So, yeah. So the fact that I kept hanging on, right, instead of just dropping, it's because I was not totally, completely 100% sure that the Dreams deal is good.
Okay, I'm sorry, I should have been, I may have phrased it poorly. What I meant is when it was just down to you and Dreams, why not look over to him and say, hey, if either of one of us wins it, it's coming to me, why don't you just drop and I'll take it?
Yeah, I never thought of that. For some reason.
Okay. That I was always...
My only thought was, why is he still hanging on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That triggers me to think, like, I should hang on too, right?
Right. So because, now...
Yeah, triggers my doubt, right?
So now Dreams wins, and you have a few nerve-wracking hours here where your fate's essentially out of your hands. Did you talk to Dreams during this time? Did Earl and Cassandra maybe try and convince him to do something, or did people just kind of leave him to make his own decision?
Yeah, I think Earl may have talked to him.
Yeah, we saw a conversation that made air where Earl was just kind of saying, hey, do what you got to do. And we would imagine that Earl would be saying, hey, go ahead and keep it so I can win 9-0-0 instead of having Yao Man there.
Came back to me and told me that he's quite sure Dreams will honor his deal.
Okay.
All right. So then we get to Tribal Council now, and you know, it's been building up to this big moment for so long now. Probes asks Dreams if he's going to keep it, and he says he is in fact going to keep it. Before this happens, did you consider, like, when it became clear he was having doubts, did you think about maybe just saying, look, if you give it up, I'm still going to vote for you, we can both be safe, you know, we can both book our seat in the finals. Did you consider anything like that, or did you just try and just let him...
No, I never even considered talking to him.
Okay, because, like, did you worry that maybe if you talked to him, he would think you were being pushy and...
Yeah, I think if I have gone up to him and talked to him, right, and talk him into like, here, you know, suppose I guarantee you that I won't vote you out, that, and I can guarantee you because I can get my friend Earl to vote the same, so that to do not vote for you either, right? Then maybe it would have made some difference. So.
Yeah, I think
I'm not really a social guy, right? I so seldom, you know, I would not even think of going up to persuade something like that.
Yeah, I think with Dreams, honestly, there's not a whole lot you can do. Dreams isn't someone who a rational argument one way or the other is going to sway him necessarily. It's more what he's feeling like in the moment. And I'm curious.
Yes, exactly.
Because a lot was made of, with Dreams in general and with this car deal and with him choosing to keep the necklace, a lot of people were inferring that largely his motivation was spending his entire life in such meager conditions and being, you know, effectively homeless for a long time. And which,
by the way, I did not know. That's what a horrible social player I was.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay.
I spent many weeks, I had no idea. Because I never had any small talks and so on with him, right? So if I had known, no, I would have played it very differently. Had I known, right, that somebody who goes dumpster diving for lunch with his brother is not somebody who would think long-term consequence of his actions, right? Right. It's the immediate gratification, is the immediate thing that counts. No, if I had known, I would not have done, I would have played it differently.
Yeah, it's interesting that you keep saying you're a poor social player, and I think you're just being humble there and understanding yourself, but you say that, and then you say at the same time you think you would have won a jury vote against Earl. Do you think that would have been where maybe the jury didn't know you as much as a person, but they would respect your achievements or something like that?
Right. Exactly. That way I was going to play, again, as I said, the hard way, in that, you know, yeah, the way I was going to impress the jury was to tell them how good I did all challenges and so on, right? As opposed to, hey, you know, I know all about these things and all this social strategy, of which I really didn't have, right? That I should have really have talked to him more. I mean, it would have been a very different outcome.
Okay. So one big thing that happens here is that you learn at the beginning of this tribal council that it's going to be a final three instead of a final two. Now, had that not been the case, do you think Earl maybe would have kept you, or do you think Dreams would have kept his word there?
I don't know, because, that final three thing was a surprise to me, totally. Right? Because Cook Island was the first time that they had a final three.
Yeah,
right.
And you guys didn't get to see all of that, right?
No, we didn't get to see it. We were in production by then. So we had no idea it's going to be final three.
Sure, because it seems like if there's a final two, then after that night, there's still another day, there's another challenge to play, another tribal council. Whereas here, it's like the money's right there on their side. So if they vote you out there, they're in the finals and they get a chance to argue their case.
They get it right, exactly. They got the chance right then.
Okay, so now you go out. A lot of people were heartbroken to see you leave there, and now you go to the jury house. What was the general atmosphere there? I imagine it was one of great anger towards Dreams, but what was like the overall attitude there?
Well, we at that time they were quite strict about us not talking about the show. So at the Losers Lodge, we were not to talk about the show. We cannot even talk about previous Survivor shows. I understand they're a lot lax right now. But that was, nobody can talk about it.
Yeah, that was a good rule back in the day. I don't know whatever happened to that.
They enforced it. Oh, they did. I mean, they had handlers that just, as soon as we say something, go shh. Withhold your money or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. So I imagine this is a very easy jury vote on your part for your buddy Earl.
Yeah.
Was there any doubt that Earl was going to just crush Dreams and Cassandra?
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, easy game, honestly, for when you're up in the finals against Earl and Cassandra there.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's what
you can do to scold those other two is important, right?
Right. So as we kind of wrap on Fiji and get into more general kind of questions, I'm curious what you thought about your season, your season Fiji as a TV product as a whole and the reception to it.
Well, not being a TV person, so I won't have a what do you call that, a calibration standard. So
sure.
I really don't. So, but from all I have read, the Fiji season is one of the not so popular seasons. In fact, I think Probst hates it. And you know, what can I say? And CBS lost Fort.
Well, Probst hates a lot of things. I thought it was fine personally. I'm curious, are there any points where you thought there was stuff that was maybe edited out or shown inaccurately that you want to clarify quickly?
No, but what they, not anything inaccurate, but I realized what's happening in that, you know, people come out of the show and say, oh, I have a bad edit or whatever. Well, you know, we were given, what, 3 different psychological profile tests. You know, they pretty much know everything about us, and they are now amplifying whatever you have by 1,000%, right? So that's what it is, right? They're trying to amplify the character you are. They didn't create the character. They amplify what you are. So for me, I happen to be sort of the lovable old geek for that season. And so now, you know, every time I do things that sort of reinforce that stereotype that I'm the lovable old geek, they show it. And when I do things that are not, they don't show it. They don't emphasize it. So
mm-hmm. I'm curious because we heard a lot about, and just talking through with you, about Earl and your promise not to ever vote him out. How important was it for you to maintain on a personal level, like your honor and integrity and honesty and so forth out on the island? Was there any way you would have voted for Earl?
Not unless there's some extenuating circumstances. Like if I found out that he's about to double cross me, then yeah, I would. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, at that time, I have 2 teenage daughters. Right. It's one of these when that is in the back of my mind, you know, would I ever get naked anywhere? No, you know, I'll be paying for their therapy for the rest of their life to see them to see the dead naked. I mean, it's like, it's one of these where, you know, there are things, you know, once you are in that situation, you go, oh, yeah, there are things that I can and cannot do, right? Yeah, no, I mean, if I'm a single guy, you know, who cares, right?
Right.
I can live differently, but, you know, when you have 2, you know, teenage daughters, you know, you have to consider, you know, their life and, you know, consider, you know, what are they going to be faced with when they get to school and everybody goes, hey, I saw a dad naked on TV or something. That's not going to make it, right?
Sure.
So.
One thing we're always very interested in hearing is your take on Jeff Probst.
He is a very nice guy. I was very surprised. Despite his, you know, very, you know, he's one of the, what, A-list personality on TV. He's very, very humble, very nice, personable. He's not very tall, by the way. I mean, in fact, he's shorter than me.
So. Well, we've heard that he's pretty short, yeah.
Yes, he's very short. And I was very surprised when I first saw him. I thought, really? So TV can make you send. So he never stand near very tall people, very, you know. And the other thing is he has a really, really potty mouth, okay? I think everybody know that too, right?
Yeah.
When he was explaining the rules of challenges, right? It takes like forever, half an hour to 40 minutes. Just explain the damn rules. You hear it in 4 seconds, right? And he would say, don't you effing touch this. And I say, well, you'll be effing disqualified. Don't you miss like every verb adjectives.
Did he ever...
is effing.
Did he ever at tribal council, we've heard from previous players that he would kind of go off on people if they weren't giving him what he wanted for the TV product. Did you have
yes, 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 he did. Not only that, the fun thing about him is that I don't know if you know, in many other reality shows, the host either have cue cards or notes, or they have an earpiece, right? Mm-hmm. What's the other one? Hogan, the
Phil one Cowan.
That, not Phil Cowan, what's that show where they have all kinds of, they have to eat gross food, they get buried in snakes and so on.
Oh, Joe Rogan from Fear Factor.
Fear Factor, right? He has an earpiece, right? So he get prompted what to say. Jeff is totally fresh. He doesn't even have notes in front of him. I'm sure he must have read some of the notes from the few producers, but he doesn't have any cue cards or any notes on any earpiece. So it's completely ad-lib. Totally. So occasionally he would trip over his tongue when he's saying things, and then they have to do a retake. They say, all right, let me say this again, right? So in our season, there was a rumor going on that Sylvia doesn't know how to swim, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and it turned out Cassandra doesn't know how to swim either. But anyway, so he was trying to find out if Sylvia doesn't know how to swim. But, you know, Sylvia, she can talk for 15 minutes and not say anything, right? So she always talk around the question. And then Jeff would ask her, you know, but, you know, do you know how to swim and are you afraid of water? And then finally, you know, he got really upset and said, Sylvia, for the fourth time, in 50 words or less, do you know how to swim? That was funny.
Yeah, so Fiji, of course, not your only experience playing. You went back for fans versus favorites. Of course, that didn't go as well. One thing that was flagged up in an interview we did with Johnny Fairplay is that right. You and he and Penner had a pregame alliance. Can you verify that for us?
No, we never have a pregame alliance.
That fucking liar.
He may have imagined it. with Penner, we made an alliance as soon as we met each other. Mm-hmm. On the island, right? As soon as we're there, we, you know, Penner go, come here, right? When we were building the shelter, that's when we made the alliance, right? Okay. There.
I can't imagine Fairplay would lie to someone like that. Anyway,
I know. I feel so used.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Are there any like cool stories or anecdotes from your time on either of your seasons that you feel like you want to share?
Let's see. Oh yeah, on Fiji. On Fiji, when we were in the Ravu Island, that's, you know, very cold. One night it got really cold, windy. We were shivering. You know, we were like laying on the ground, right? And I was laying next to Rita, Miss Venezuela. She didn't mind me telling the story because she actually, you know, I actually told it with her next to me at some gathering. So she woke me up like 2 o'clock in the morning. She goes, yeah, man, I'm cold. Can I snuggle with you? So I go, sure, why not? So she snuggled with me. And then the next morning I go, oh shit, they have night vision camera on us. I'm going to explain this one, right? You know, so I was trying to figure out, okay, every 3 days is one episode before the merge and so on, you know, when we'll get shown. So I had to tell my kids and my wife then about, you know, hey, you're going to see me snuggling with Rita, right? Well, guess they didn't show it. I did a confession.
So you were worried you're going to be showing it like this old horn dog who was like preying on his tribe.
Yeah. The thing is that because what happened did not affect the outcome of the show, they don't show it, right? So a lot of things happen. But if it does not affect the outcome, they don't show it. They have it on tape, right?
Yeah.
So if, let's say, one of the boys, let's say if Mookie or whatever, saw me snuggling with her and was jealous and decided to scheme and plot to vote me out because he's jealous of me, you know, snuggling with Rita, then it would show on the tape. It would show on TV, right?
Right.
It's a story. That's why, you know. So, for example, one of the things that Anthony Robinson, right, he is such a hilarious, he's a comic. I mean, he kept us in stitches, the stories he tell, and he's good at mimicking voices. So while we're sitting around, right, he would mimic, Jeff Probst at Tribal Council with an East Indian accent, right? what do you think about this and all that? And we were just laughing our heads off. We had such a great time with him. I mean, he's good at that. Next time, if you ever see him, ask him to do the East Indian voice, you know, the Indian accent. And he was doing, you know, he was playing, you know, Jeff Probst as an East Indian. And we were just rolling on the ground laughing. It was too funny. And they never show that, right? They have on tape somewhere.
Yeah, it struck me watching that Fiji is a season where you don't see as many of those little like counter moments as you do in other seasons. One final thing before we let you go. You mentioned at the start it's been bugging me ever since. What is the capital of Mongolia?
Oh, Ulaanbaatar.
Wonderful.
Oh, sure. Come on, Tom. How do you not know that?
Do you know the capital city of the Sultanate of Brunei?
I do not, no, shockingly.
Bandar Seri Begawan. There you go, right? Look it up.
There we go.
I'm glad we can provide an educational experience to our listeners. But yeah, Yaman, that's thank you for joining us today. We know we've kept you here for a long time, but you've talked at great length about a lot of things, and we've been very happy to have you.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I think that's basically going to do it for today. So thank you once again, just like Dom said. Yaman, we so much appreciate you taking all this time. Thanks, everyone who listened, and we will talk to you guys very soon. Take care, everybody.